pre-agency work. He has also been involved in other projects related to issues such as the regulation of temporary work and union strategies during his time at the Work Research Institute. So please, Per, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Hører dere? Ja, greit, ja. Yes. It's been said that history repeats itself, but not in the same way. And from this perspective, it's interesting to see how regulation of temporary work agencies are again high on political agenda. It's now 17 years ago since the ban on labor hire and private mediation of labor was lifted in Norway. But the current initiatives to regulate the staffing industry makes the situation of today look more like the situation 47 years ago than the situation 17 years ago. And 47 years ago, in 1970, an initiative to ban hiring out labor in Norway was taken. And the process was initiated by a center-right coalition government, but it was adopted by the Labour Party government, who took power from 1971. And the bill was passed unanimously in the parliament. And whether or not we will see the same consensus in the parliament in the future is, of course, impossible to decide. But it seems clear that the question of controlling the staffing industry is again political ambition, which is not exclusively a matter of the political left and trade unions. And I will, in this presentation, talk about temporary work agencies and the standard employment relationship from a historical perspective. I will focus on the strategies of trade unions and employers towards the growing presence of temporary work agencies in the engineering industry from, also verkstedindustrien, from mid-1950s. To show how both trade unions and employers contributed to the establishment of a norm for typical employment relationships. The presence of temporary work agencies affected all elements of the standard employment relationship. I will first give a short introduction to the standard employment relationship and a brief overview of how it has changed before I move to the trade unions and employers in the engineering industry. And I'll use Lea Voskos' definition. And the standard employment relationship became the typical employment relationship in modern capitalist economies after the Second World War, both in quantitative terms and as a political and legal norm. And according to Voskos, it can be defined as resting on three pillars. First is the bilateral employment relationship between an employer and a worker. The second is permanent employment, and the third is full-time position. And we can, with emphasis on the permanent bilateral employment relationship, the changes in the period from 1945 until 2000 can be divided into three periods. During the first phase, from 1945 to 1970, the main trend was expansion. The standard employment relationship was excluded and extended to include other labor market groups than the male prime age model worker or industrial capitalism. But legally, the standard employment relationship was weak. Temporary work agencies was not regulated. Neither was temporary employment and protection against dismissals, oppsigelsesvernet, was limited. But almost three decades of strong economic boom, a period also known as the golden age of capitalism, kept the demand for labor at a high level, and the decline of precarious employment accelerated in this period. And 1971 marked the beginning of a new phase. And from 1971 to 1980, the standard employment relationship was enshrined in law, rettsliggjort, I betydningen at det ble regulert ved lov. As mentioned, in 1971, temporary work agencies was banned in Norway, but with possibilities for dispensations. And the bilateral employment relationship was thus confirmed as the model. And in addition, in this period, protection against dismissals was strengthened. It was introduced in 1936, but it was relatively weak compared to the changes that happened during the 1970s. And before 1975, for example, younger workers under the age of 21 was not entitled to protection, and neither was workers with length of service shorter than 2 years. And also in 1977, in the Working Environment Act, temporary work was strictly limited. And the final event in this period was that in 1980, as Leavosko said, hiring in labor was also banned. And from the beginning of 1980, we can talk about a new phase when the expansion and the strengthening of the standard employment relationship ceased. But it was, if you look at the legal aspects, it was not dismantled in general. In the trade and office sector, the office sector, the prohibition on temporary work agencies was lifted in 1983, but in some ways the standard employment relationship was even strengthened. In 1995, the access to use temporary workers in the Working Environment Act was tightened. If we look at the change in norms and the economy, the standard employment relationship was weakened. The mass unemployment was in this period reintroduced for the first time since the interwar era, and the policy for full employment became less active. The acceptance for atypical employment increased. And of great importance was that Norwegian Confederation of Employers, Norsk Arbeidsgiverforening, in this period put the question of flexibility high on the agenda. It was, according to the CEO of Norwegian Employers Confederation in 1988, necessary to slaughter some sacred cows, as he put it. And what he was referring to, among other things, was the existing restrictions on temporary work agencies and the protection against dismissals. And during the 1990s, employers challenged what I may call a contract that the standard employment relationship was founded on. And that was that both trade unions and employers, to a large extent, had agreed that the general rule in Norway should be permanent employment in a bilateral employment relationship. But they also agreed that not too many should be in a permanent positions, and that those who were in permanent positions should not be too well protected against unfair dismissal. And in other words, employers, at least to a large extent, accepted that the general rule should be permanent employment, and trade unions accepted that certain groups of workers should be loosely tied to the labor market. And more specific, it was agreed that temporary employment should be restricted to specific groups and specific work assignments. Permanent work should imply permanent employment. And in the 1990s, employers argued that it was necessary to use temporary employment to carry out permanent work. And during the first half of the 1990s, this received a lot of public attention when first transport workers and later hotel workers went on strike against the use of labor, hire, and temporary and part-time work. But as mentioned, at the same time, the opportunity to use temporary employment was in the Working Environment Act tightened, and this was partly because of the conflicts in the hotel and transport sector. The end of this phase was in 2000, when the legal aspects of the standard employment relationship also started to crumble as the ban on temporary agencies was lifted. And for almost 30 years, the temporary work agencies had been subject to restrictions. And as I know we'll talk about, the standard employment relationship was not challenged only during the 90s, 1980s and 1990s. It was also challenged during the heydays, the golden age. And I'm now turning to the trade unions and employers in the engineering industry. The period from 1955 to 1971. The first temporary work agencies showed up in the office sector in 1948, but they gained no attention before the temporary work agencies was established in the engineering industry. And in 1955, employers within the Confederation of Employers in the Engineering Industry, MVL, Mekaniske Verkstedets Landsforening, became aware of a new way of hiring out labor. And what was new about this was that firms made hiring out the workers their core business activity. From the very start, employers within the MVL, the employers in the engineering industry, engaged in an extensive organized effort against the presence of the temporary work agencies. And why did the employers work against the temporary work agencies? And the response of the employers must be seen in relation to a period of strong economic boom in the first three decades after the Second World War. And this period was characterized by a policy of full employment, as I mentioned, with high levels of demand for labor, which allowed for an extensive turnover initiated by employees. And the temporary work agencies contributed, according to employers, negatively to this situation. Other reasons were that turnover increased the wages of the workers, the so-called wage drift, lønnsglidning. And the quote is from the director general of Norwegian firm Borregaard. And he was also Rein Henriksen. He was also a member of the Norwegian Confederation of Employers. As I say, an obvious reason for this situation is the case that firms that are doing human trafficking, to put it that way, are able to operate regardless of all guidelines. And I would like to ask whether a proper campaign can be initiated to put a stop to this traffic. Is it not possible to make an end of the piracy that are going on everywhere? Cannot firms and organizations on both sides go together in order to carry out an absolute exclusion of these firms? And the MVL was aimed at strengthening the bilateral employment relationship in order to maintain a core of skilled employees permanently at the firm. And the ultimate motive was to gain control over the labor force. And how did the employers attempt to recover the permanent bilateral employment relationship? They tried to exclude the temporary work agencies from the labor market. The most forceful strategy in order to achieve this was to attempt to boycott the temporary work agencies. And already in 1955, the employers decided to boycott the agencies. And in the beginning, the boycott was carried out silently within a few members of the Employers' Confederation. But later, the boycott became more organized and formal. In 1970, almost 40 firms with 20,000 employees signed an agreement that strictly limited the use of temporary work agencies to certain work assignments. And in a wider context, the attempt to exclude the temporary work agencies can be seen in relation to the period named by the historian Edvard Bull as organized capitalism. And the organization of capitalism was intensified after the Second World War and until the mid-1970s. And the aim was to restrict the free and damaging competition between capitalist firms in order to prevent economic crisis and mass unemployment. And one pillar of the organized capitalism was to control the labor market, or more specific, the access to labor. And this was also in the interests of employers, because in the period of strong economic boom after the Second World War, lack of control could increased wage drift and turnover between firms, industries, and parts of the country. And the temporary work agencies was in this perspective and employer out of control. I can also mention a fourth reason for the resistance among the employers, and that was the threat of strikes and industrial actions from the workers and trade unions. From the beginning of the 1960s, the counterpart of the MVL, that was the Norwegian Union of Iron and Metal Workers, Jernometall, drew their attention to the temporary work agencies. According to the iron and metal workers, the temporary work agencies caused problems in different ways. And the critique that was raised by the local unions rests on two principles that both concern the question of solidarity. First, the local unions promoted the need for equality between the workers at the workplace. And according to several union representatives, temporary agency workers earned more money than the permanently employed. And in addition, temporary agency workers did not adhere to the working time regulations and they worked longer hours. And second, local unions promoted the need for stability among the workforce. The mobile character of the temporary work agencies made it difficult for the trade unions to control their activities and to include the agency workers in the union. And the response of the Union of Iron Metal Workers was to reject the temporary work agencies but accept their employees as members. And similar to the employers in this sector, the response can be labeled as a way of exclusion. And an alternative response could be to engage the temporary work agencies by entering into collective agreements. The question is why exclusion and not engagement? And I think it was due to two main reasons. And according to the existing basic agreement, union density in a specific firm had to be over 50% before a union was allowed to force through a collective agreement through industrial actions. And in general, union density in temporary work agencies was far away from 50%. And trade unions were thus dependent on that the temporary work agencies accepted collective agreements without conflict. And the second reason, more or less followed by the first, and that was even if the temporary work agencies should accept collective agreements without industrial actions, problems were not necessarily solved. Without local union representatives, no one could control that employer actually fulfilled the agreement. And without this guarantee, iron metal workers union was not willing to legitimize the temporary work agencies by signing an agreement. But according to another member of LO, the Norwegian Union of Construction Workers, exclusion was not the only option. Opposite to the Iron and Metal Workers Union, the response of the construction workers was engagement. They accepted collective agreement with the temporary work agencies and tried to organize the agency workers. And the two different approaches to the temporary work agencies revealed two different approaches to the standard employment relationship. And through its policy of exclusion, iron and metal workers showed that their primary concern was the core workers of the firm, the permanent employees, and not the temporary, not the agency workers. And the attempt to exclude the temporary work agencies may be seen as an attempt to eliminate the existence of triangular employment relationships. The construction workers' policy of engagement was, on the contrary, oriented towards the periphery workers, and they accepted atypical employment relationship, but tried to make their conditions as similar as possible to the standard worker. But the attempt by the construction workers to engage the temporary work agency, the agency workers, caused problems within the LO. Where do the agency workers belong? And in other words, which trade unions was entitled to recruit them as their members? The temporary agency workers carried out work that fell within several collective agreements. And thus several trade unions. And because of this, conflicts arose between the metal workers and the construction workers, and the question of engaging the temporary work agencies was turned into a classic issue within the labor movement, namely a turf war between unions, altså en organisasjonskonflikt, da, om hvor medlemmene hørte til. And turf war ended when the question on temporary work agencies and their legal position was raised. As mentioned, in 1970, authorities began the preparations for changing the law, and in 1971, hiring out labor became an illegal activity. In that way, the bilateral employment relationship was confirmed as the model. And hence the problem was solved. And the question of engaging the temporary work agencies was, on a low level, abandoned. To conclude, I can say that the standard employment relationship was established in a period where the interest of both trade unions and employers were, to a certain extent, united in the permanent bilateral employment relationship. In simple terms, the need for job security went together with the need for control over the labor force. And as a result, the standard employment relationship were strengthened during the first three decades after the Second World War, both legally and also, if you think about the access to the legal norm. Yes.
Thank you, Per. We have time for some questions, so please. Anyone?
Yes. Is the microphone? Oh, it's tight.
I'm Line Eldring from Fellesforbundet. Yeah. Thanks for a really interesting historical perspective. I'm wondering if you would dare to reflect a bit on the current positions and responses, and maybe in particular, well, the two unions, construction and Ierno, iron and metal, they are now in one union, my union, but on the employer side, we do see some diversion or disagreements in responses. So, if you would comment on that.
Yes. Well, as I said, it's interesting how also employers within the construction industry now is talking about regulating the temporary work agencies, and the reasons are it's quite similar to the reasons in 1971, because it was temporary work agencies created an even competition between the firms, but at the same time, you don't have this. I don't know the situation of today that well. What they are thinking, what their strategies are, I think we'll hear more about that from Hedda maybe later today. Yeah.
We have time for one more question. Anyone else? Dara?
Hi, Dara Golden from AFI. Thank you, Per, for that. I've a question just towards the end when you had the metal workers union and you had the construction workers union, how they had a different approach to, and you, if I understood correctly, explained that in terms of their relationship to the standard employment relationship. But a question I'd ask is, within that, what role did ideology play a role as well?
Yes, well, of course, the Arnhem Metal Workers Union originated from and was based in the on stationary firms, and to the least extent to permanent workers in the industry, where you also had the idea of permanent positions, stationary workers, stability was the strongest, while the construction workers was more like it was not that small. Mobile firms was a well-known phenomenon, and you also know from the past that construction workers was traveling a lot from the workplace to workplace, and that also had a way of had a ideological reason that it was an ideal to look around, to move around. So that may also have shaped how they met temporary work agencies, which also was mobile firms with mobile workers.
We have one more question here.
Knut Kjersali, Oslo. Leah Waskow, you predicted, so to speak, that Norway will become more like Ontario. That was a possibility develop in that direction. What are the reasons for it, as you see? Is it economic pressure, ideology, kind of power game? You just sort of stated that this was likely. Could you expand on the reasons behind?
Thanks for the question. I know I provided a lot of information. I think it's probably a combination of things. There's certainly greater economic pressure than in the post-war boom, and this project is focused also on migration, as I understand it. And I've read your papers on nursing and this sort of thing. So it seems to me that these factors coming together produce these kinds of pressures. But of course, I think what's so very interesting about Pierre's work is this the ideological, and in particular the positioning of the metal workers. Just again from my reading and from what I know about elsewhere. That the metal workers were so concerned, engineers, to protect the core, that there wasn't much concern about who was on the periphery. But in a context like construction, where work is itself mobile, there is a history, at least in North America and elsewhere, of a kind of hiring hall type of model, then there would be arguably also more pressure. And this is what's so interesting about your comment about the current. Because this would have been my question as well. What does the current look like? That the employers are more perhaps... they maybe have diverse views, but are more in line with the unions in this context because things are quite chaotic, I presume, because of EU labor market mobility, people moving, the challenges in construction. Even a couple of weeks ago, the building in the UK? You know, that those kind of questions, occupational health and safety, et cetera, are creating perhaps more similarities between the positions of unions and employers in a trade like construction. You didn't answer about where engineers are at this point. You know, if this is this continuing kind of coalition between employers and workforces, if that continues, or if ideologically, possibly things have changed with growing migration, more women in the labor force, all kinds of things that perhaps if they don't eliminate these exclusionary practices, they might moderate them on the surface. So in my view, I think it's a mix, but I'd be interested to hear what you say as well.
Okay, so Per gets the final word.
Yeah. I know if I really got your question was... Today?
Yeah, because today you talked about the construction industry.
I really don't know how they look at the temporary work agencies. But I think that the engineering industry was a turning point was in 1980, where both the employers and the trade union, the iron metal workers, left their exclusion policy and went more not in the direction of engagement but in the direction to accepting temporary work agencies as a necessary actor in the business. So the boycott actions and things like that was not longer the main strategy. And I guess that may be the situation today, that it's an institutionalized part of the industry, a special industry which is producing for the oil industry, where it's you have these relatively short periods with a high demand for labor, and you have periods with where you don't know what the length of next contract or the length of next job. Again, I guess there are others that know more about the situation today in that sector than me.
Okay, so thank you very much, Per, and thank you for the questions. Let's give him one more round of applause.